it over to you, and probably what we may need to decide at the end of your presentation is what is the way forward. It has been towing and froing. The last point, sticky point that we had in your presentation and our discussion was the oversight mechanism and the role of the executive. I think that's what was more of a concern from our side. Let's just run through. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, members. I've compiled a document, well, I've just changed the format of the document that was handed out. I'm not sure whether the colors are on the printed version, but certainly on the electronic version that was distributed, and we'll see the color. What we've done is just highlighted in yellow what the National Treasury and the Auditor General of South Africa is proposing to include in the bill. And then my apologies, except for one or two places, everything that was in square brackets, that is a way of drafting, which means these things must be removed out of the present bill, but we now drew our lines through them so that one can see exactly what is intended with the amendments. And the intention is so the committee can fully understand what we want to do with the amendment bill and take a decision on that and get the bill to the NCOP. Firstly, Chair, this is in the long title of the draft amendment bill. And this is now as a result of the further amendments coming from National Treasury and the Auditor General. So we're just explaining in the long title that we're inserting further definitions and we're amending provisions dealing with the oversight mechanism. As the Chair said, that's sort of the sticking point, to amend provisions dealing with Parliament's annual budget, appropriations and approvals, etc., etc. Chair, when we go, I'll just focus on the amendments that were proposed or the new things that we bring to the committee. First of all, and I'll run through it. If I'm going too fast, please stop me, because we've dealt with this in the last meeting. I'm just trying to make it clearer. There's a new definition of approved budget. Now, let me just say here from the outset, that's now the amendment brought along by National Treasury, which proposes that a single amount is appropriated to Parliament, and then Parliament, through an internal process, will then appropriate those funds into specific divisions of the main vote. So the divisions of the main vote won't happen in the appropriation bill. It will happen through a parliamentary mechanism. So what is that concept is translated in the Financial Management of Parliament bill. Whereas before we had a provision, and I'll get to section 18, which says this is how we deal with our budget in the appropriation bill, that section is basically saying this is how we deal with the budget in our internal procedures. But for that purpose, we've changed the definition of approved budget. And it now doesn't read to include the funds, it's just that contemplated in section 18, and we'll get there. It consists of all the same elements. Chair, in section 2 of the Act, I think it is section 3 or section 2 of the Act, section 2 of the Act speaks of the objects of the Act. Two things I have to just say here. Firstly, also with respect to the long title, the Auditor General wanted to include issues there of performance management. And our argument was that the long title as well as the objects of the Act deals with the whole purpose of the Act. Performance management is a tool to reach those purposes. So we have efficiencies and effectiveness, we have transparency and accountability, and performance management will be a tool that we get there, or how to get there. So we are not of the view that it should be included in the long title or in the objects of the Act, but we've included, as we will go through the bill now, we've included that in all the other areas where the Auditor General thought it should be included. So it is there in terms of law, it is there and as binding as anything. But one of the objects of this Act is not to do performance management, it's to do financial management. However, the Auditor General did propose that we provide here, as one of the objects, where we provide Parliament oversight of Parliament's budget and expenditure. that we include that bit there, as provided for in Section 4 of the Act. The effect of that will be that there can be only one mechanism to provide oversight over the budgeting and expenditure, and that would be the oversight mechanism. We won't be able to use another mechanism for it. Up to now, some of these functions were performed by the Parliamentary Oversight Authority, which is not, strictly speaking, a committee of Parliament. It's a mechanism of Parliament. I shouldn't use the word mechanism, but it's a structure, a management structure of Parliament. It's not a committee as such. It's not open to the public. It doesn't have the same powers as committees have. So we support that inclusion, because that is the intention of the Act. Chair, when we go down, we get to what will be a new Section 3 of the Act. Just to remind members, this is now where we're saying, where this Act reads in a certain way to apply to Parliament, we must also read it to apply to provincial legislatures. So this is the result of that Limpopo Court judgment. Now, we're making this Act wholesale, if I may say, applicable to provincial legislatures. But in doing so, we're also delegating legislative powers to provincial legislatures to make regulations to deal with various things, including debt management, including setting standards for budgeting, including your supply chain management regulations, and so forth. National Treasury and the Auditor General made the submission to say these functions should remain centralized with Parliament, and provinces should have the competency to issue instructions to comply with the regulations, or the competency to make policy around it, which must also apply with the regulations and the Act. And this is what we're doing here. So we're saying to them, we're saying that wherever we read speaker or chairperson, it must be construed as a speaker of the provincial legislature, but except in the case where the executive authority is making or prescribing regulations in accordance with Section 65. That is the provision that deals specifically with the power to make regulations. So where there's a power to make regulations given to the executive authority, provinces will not have that power. So it puts an obligation on Parliament to make regulations for the whole legislative sector, in other words. We support that submission. When I say we, Parliament's administration, I've discussed all of this with the Secretary to Parliament, who's discussed it again with the executive authority. So that is supported. It would also address Treasury's concerns that there might not be uniformity when we're dealing with regulations for supply chain management or debt collection and so forth. Chair, further to that same section, something we omitted in the first published draft bill, when we read in the Public Finance Management Act Section 30, it must also refer to Section 31, and this deals with the adjustments budget of provincial legislatures. And the same with the national adjustments budget should be construed as the provincial adjustments budget. Of course, we will support that. Chair, this is the sticking point, Section 4. Mr. Kurnov last time, I think, said we should make it clear what are we removing and what are we keeping in, and that's why we've now deleted that. That is what we propose to remove. And we want to say that just that the representation must be in accordance with the joint rules, which must provide that no member may attend a meeting where a matter will be deliberated on in which that member has a material interest. Now, Chair, that was the sticking point. I've distributed a research document that was compiled around about 2009-2010, which was used to get to this result. It analyzes, first of all, the oversight landscape of Parliament in general, and just some general concept about internal and external oversight mechanisms. And it makes the point that an external oversight mechanism, like an oversight mechanism, which acts as a type of scoper vis-a-vis Parliament's administration, is at arm's length of the institution. It's not a management function that should be done there. It's not a monitoring function. It's an oversight function. In other words, it looks at your midterm reports, it looks at your annual reports, and reports to the houses on those. It doesn't do day-to-day monitoring of management. That specific task falls within your internal audit committee, your audit committee, as well as the executive authority, who is required in terms of the Act to monitor and oversee the performance of the accounting officer. So in that document, it gives us that perspective on it. It also deals, in short, with some of the comments that Honourable Harris has made in the memorandum we distributed at the last meeting on this draft bill. Indirectly, it just tries to bring to the fore what are the external functions, what are the internal functions, and where should we draw the line and why. The document then goes further to analyse certain other jurisdictions and their management oversight mechanisms that's established in terms of legislation. It's not, and I'll be frank with the committee, it's not always apples compared with apples, but what that document does is it says that in Canada, in the UK, in Malawi, and I think there's one or two others that they analyse. We have these in Kenya, I think, as well. The Kenyan one is not analysed, but I sort of know the Kenyan one. The speaker of those jurisdictions chairs these committees. And these committees also have dual functions, mostly. One is to do the oversight of the institution, its financial management. Another one is to do planning and budgeting, which is what we're bringing into the Financial Management Act now. And it's for that purpose that we are saying there is a role to play for the executive authority on this structure. Chair, I'm not, except for referring to the new document, I'm not saying anything new now. I'm merely trying to, with this document that I handed out, to assist the reasoning behind this whole motivation. I want to leave it there before I say too much, Chair. If we carry on, Chair, these I should have deleted or just struck through, these ones in square brackets. I'll do that in a new version, but these are amendments proposed by National Treasury. And this is where National Treasury is saying that Parliament's budget needs to deal with your main divisions within the vote, because you're just going to get this lump sum. Section 16 and 18 will deal with those.
So, I just want to see that one. You say they want to work in the bracket because of the sponge.
That is being expunged. What I should have done, like I did with the others, I've put a line through it to make it clear.
That's all.
That one and these ones too, so yeah. I've left those two.
Which is more in public funds?
Money or funds?
Yeah. Which one is more appropriate, money or funds?
National Treasury suggested money, simply because that's the word used in the appropriation bill. And that's what they want
money
to do. And money both. The Financial Management Act itself uses both terms, even before National Treasury came and suggested that we change something. But this specific one, they motivated in their document, in the letter from the minister, there was a little footnote attached to that, that said the reason they do money is because when we refer to the concept in the appropriation bill, we use money. And that Roman figure 1 deals specifically with the money that's coming through the Appropriation Act in the end. I certainly don't have a problem with using either word. And if it's clearer to use money because of the Appropriation Act, then I fully support that. But this sets up Parliament's budget. What one will see further here, the own revenue sources, just to remind the committee, is that unspent funds of Parliament. So those are the three areas, three revenue sources for Parliament. Your unspent funds of the previous year, your donor funds, and the appropriated money. National Treasury suggested that we remove that bit from the budget because that is mostly a contractual issue or an internal issue for Parliament, not something that we have to submit to Treasury.
So money is to be intake, funds is to be spent.
Yes.
Money is to be equal. Yeah, money is to be equal.
Funds.
But it's what? I won't make a point. Doesn't sit well when you do public funds.
use money.
The bill may be send money to the staff.
Yeah.
A value gain with public funds, when you reduce it to money, in the lines.
Yes.
I think that's it. Well,
sir, I
think
this is Chair, please take this last time.
Yeah. I don't want to speak on behalf of Treasury, but in my view, legally, it's an issue of choice. It's an issue of preference. If we want to prefer funds, we want to keep it funds. But there are a few places in the Financial Management Act itself where they also use money, but not in the terms of appropriation of public money, but about dealing with money and how we pay for money. Chair, that brings us to section 18, which I referred to earlier. This section used to be specifically about how are we going to submit, not how we, but what is going to be in our budget we give to National Treasury for the appropriation, and how is it set out. This is, the purpose of this section has now changed, because this will be now an internal mechanism. So then it is now Parliament, through a resolution, will have to take that lump sum that Treasury has given Parliament and divide it into main divisions. And here again you can see we use money. But Chair, if the committee wants that to change, that's not a problem.
No, that's not good.
Okay. All this section is doing is, as I said before, it deals with Parliament must now have an internal mechanism to appropriate its budget that was given as a lump sum into its main divisions and into programs. And this will be a task also that must go through the oversight mechanism. And that's one of the reasons why the executive authority should be sitting there in those instances. But I will leave it there. It just gives the power here that such an appropriation may be for a specific and exclusive purpose. I might just add that when Treasury gives us our lump sum, they may also do the same, to say something is for an exclusive or a specific purpose and a specific purpose. Chair, it's a technical area. I don't want to waste the committee's time too much unless there's a specific question on it. But it's a new mechanism, and what the effect of it is that it gives Parliament the power, as well as the responsibility, to deal with the public funds it receives in that autonomous and independent way that the separation of powers envisages. So we clearly will support this amendment brought by National Treasury. Chair, the other part, these amendments, clause 10 and 11 of the Act, amending sections, I think it's 20 and 21, Treasury is intending to make it very clear that those funds that Parliament didn't use in the financial year, and that we do not have to return to the National Revenue Fund, these funds become our own funds, own revenue. We need to include it in our budget, in terms of section 18. We need to appropriate it, in other words, through Parliament. It's not a singular decision of the executive authority. And once that's done, it must be spent and audited according to that budget. Should one then, as it happens, bona fide, should it then happen that money is spent not in accordance with that budget, in other words, unauthorized expenditure, especially when we have exceeded that budget, gone on to overdraft, National Treasury is not going to cover that with the next year's budget. That will be money that Parliament will have to then find of its own funds to deal with it. Or, of course, they must recover that money from the person who made the unauthorized expenditure. That's not a change of situation. That has always been the case. Parliament spends its own funds, not donor funds. Donor funds will be in terms of a contract. If Parliament spends its funds from last year into a new project that we tried, but suddenly the cost escalated and we've paid that cost, we will have to find money from our own funds again to make the books balance, rather than to go through an adjustments budget process to say, well, we've incurred additional expenditure where we didn't expect it, and therefore Treasury must give us that money. So that is what Treasury is intending to do with the amendments to Section 20 and 21. If you look at Section 21, any unauthorized expenditure of funds derived from Parliament's own revenue sources, including donor funds, becomes a charge against Parliament's own funds. So it will not be against the adjustments budget. Chair, again on unspent funds, Treasury suggested that we change. That is the heading of the provision. Treasury suggests that we change it to retention of unspent funds and return of unspent funds for direct charges. As Chair said earlier, it doesn't sit well with me. I think we're still dealing with the treatment of unspent funds. So we suggest that we do not follow that, if I may say, long-winded heading, and just call it still treatment of unspent funds. The content of the amendments we have no issue with. It simply says, or the effect of it is simply, first of all, like the PFMI used to say, but we've amended that. Provinces will still have to take the PFMI out of it, but provinces, as well as Parliament, do not have to return the funds that we didn't spend in the financial year. That is to ensure that autonomy and independence of the legislatures. Chapter 9 bodies do the same. You don't return those funds, you keep them. You have to account for it. It gets audited, and you need to budget in the new year. But you don't have to return it. However, it was not clear, although we've always done it as Parliament, direct charges. The best example of a direct charge is the salaries of members. Where there's unspent direct charges, that unspent funds do not become part of Parliament's funds. Those funds must be returned. That's always been the case. When you think of the example of a member not completing a month or two, or Parliament overpaying that member, that will be unspent funds from a direct charge that we will recover from the member or from the bank account or the estate that the member passed on. That will recover, but that Parliament cannot keep as its own funds. That we return, and that's always been the case. So again, we have no issue with that. Chair, the amendment to Section 34 was proposed by the Auditor General. What I think the Auditor General wants to do there is to say, yes, we've had it. You have money that you allocate to political parties for certain purposes. It's a requirement that the political party submit an audit on those funds. If there is a qualification in the audit report, the Secretary of Parliament must withhold money that's meant for that purpose. Say it's on stationery and there's an audit query on stationery, Secretary of Parliament withholds the money that will go next year until that audit query has been resolved. Well, as the General said, we need to not call it an audit report, but an audit opinion, and we need to expand it to include qualified opinion means also an adverse opinion or an opinion that can be disclaimed. So it includes those three red marks that Auditor General usually gives. It can give qualification, but also an adverse, which is a bit worse, and of course disclaimer is bottom of the food chain. It's when there's not enough information to even make an audit report. So that's just expand, makes it clear that on these areas, if there's a query on those, the money will be withheld. Again, we support that. It just adds to the proper management of Parliament's funds. Chairperson, from Section 48 onwards in the Act, we've included, and that has to do with the functions of the Audit Committee, what they have to do. And what they need to report on. And this is where the Auditor General said we need to include specifically reporting on Parliament's performance indicators or predetermined objectives. And that's we've done that. So the Audit Committee must comment on the quality of the annual financial statements and the performance reporting and compliance with applicable laws and regulations. And we support that. It can only assist Parliament. The issue here was a textual issue. Instead of lower caps, we'll use capitals, standards of general recognized accounting practice. Again, in Section 58 of the Act, this is where we're dealing with the auditing through the Auditor General, and there we include now our annual performance report. So the Auditor General, if the Auditor General is unable to complete the audit because of the annual performance report not being submitted, then that also becomes an issue that will be tabled in the Houses, and not just your financial statements. And similarly, with the annual report and the audit report that must be tabled in the Houses, the Act will now require Section 59 to also table the annual performance report. So this will add to the transparency of Parliament's financial management, and we are in support of those. Same with Section 60. It's all the proposals made by the Auditor General. Chair, I think that's it from the inputs we received from National Treasury and the Auditor General of South Africa. I might just add that other comments coming from the Western Cape Provincial Treasury. There's one comment from a legal advisor of the Western Cape Parliament. That was just a question, but not really something to change in the Act. It was a question that we dealt with. And some comments from the FFC. FFC specifically was also on the issue of keeping the regulation-making power centralized with the executive authority of Parliament. So these comments are included. By paying attention to National Treasury and the Auditor General, most of the comments of other entities that made a submission are also included. Chair, thank you very much. That's it for now.
Thank you. I think there's a lot of work that has gone into this piece of legislation. Without getting the content, my colleagues will deal with that problem. This notion of unspent funds becoming parliamentary funds, they are not returned anyway. The assumption, in fact, that nationally, you know, this piece of legislation is good when you look at national, but it might actually lead into kind of a cannibalization of budgets at the provincial level. You know, as a former MEC for finance, I know the tension, inherent tension between the executive and the legislature. And the legislature always emphasizing that it is autonomous, it's not being supposed to be subjected to the ordinary processes of its budget being determined by the executive. And when you looked at what they would demand and what they'll be able to spend at the end of the year, financial year, it was chalk and cheese. So you'll have more money unspent. Now, this provision says those rollover funds remain a domain of the provinces. And what happens? You've got fiscal dumping. It was the financial year, the end of the financial year by provincial legislature. Fiscal dumping. Literally so. Trainings, overseas, trips, all those kinds of things. So the assumption shouldn't be that the institutional capacity and intentions will be even throughout the country in all the 9 provinces. We may actually end up with an egg in our face at that level. Speakers, I know, don't want to have the autonomy in provincial legislatures and determine their own programs. As long as the appropriated funds would be to strengthen parliamentary processes and democracy, and committees are going to be able to be capacitated to determine the programs of the legislature and so on and so forth, is one thing. I'm just saying, well, we've got a court judgment in front of us that might have another unintended consequence as we go down the line. The Western Cape will have a different view, probably, on this one. But just from my practical experience, this may become a very, very, very difficult source. to manage as we move forward. You'll have a fund, you can appropriate it, you know, through the normal processes appropriated by the legislature. Basically, it reserves power for itself to do all sorts of things. But let's move on and discuss that. The other issue that I've been asking, in fact, I was told, you were around when this piece of legislation was here. The NCOP had a different view in particular. Not the NCOP, but the chairs. Was, why can't you align this piece of legislation with the PFMA, Public Finance Management Act? Why can't Parliament just synchronize its operations within that? Which I'm told you were part of the discussions at some point. I was speaking to a former member, Tutu Khalani, who was in the COP. We didn't have the benefit of that background as a committee, you know, to say what was the lacuna in that particular area, which might still be a problem when you go to the NCOP through this process. But let's your comment on that, and allow members to comment in terms of your presentation.
General, I'll just keep it short. The issue of unspent funds that comes from the PFMA, it's not a new thing, but it is a challenge. I think this is also why National Treasury, also the Provincial Treasury, Western Cape Provincial Treasury, have said when it comes to making regulations, let's keep those centralized so that we have a uniform system, which is what the Constitution intends. But however, those unspent funds has always been the prerogative to not to repay them within the National Revenue Fund. And I need to add to that, the ability of a legislature to approve its unauthorized expenditure remains, and it was also within your Public Finance Management Act. So if there's unauthorized expenditure of the legislature can approve that unauthorized expenditure, which will make it regular. And by definition, it doesn't always fit squarely within that budget. So there can be some changes in the budget, and it can be, as the chair indicated, lead to a cannibalization of your budget in the end. But the legislatures being multi-party structures on the one hand, and the other hand, being open for the media, as well as subject to the Auditor General's audit, which audit report must be published, those are checks and balances built in to deal with it. But that make it a little bit unique to compared to a government department. But it is certainly an issue which Treasury must take note of, in my view. Although this is not the PFMA we're talking about, but when it comes to making a new appropriation, clearly Treasury must take into account that money that was not spent the previous year. I know in Parliament's case it does that. We request a certain budget, they take into consideration our unspent funds, and they'll say, well, you have unspent funds to do what you need to do. Talk to us about the funds that you do not have. It's an interesting conversation, that, because we're dealing with separation of powers, but a specific separation of powers. Every country has a different one, and this is what the Constitutional Court has said a few times. So in South Africa, as the Limpopo judgment said, our separation of powers is not to the extent where provincial legislatures can determine their own financial management structures, unless that power gets delegated or assigned to them from national. So the separation of powers is a bit different, but when it comes to the unspent funds as well as authorizing unauthorized expenditure, that has been always within the domain of a provincial legislature. But checks and balances are there. The issue of Mr. Khalani, I remember that it was on a different bill, Honorable Chairperson, where the NCOP differed substantially from the National Assembly. And that was on the money bills, which we have to come to sooner or later, even if it's just a report to the House. And there they said, let's align it a bit to the Division of Revenue Bill, and why do we want to deal with the Division of Revenue Bill in a way which is different? But I think it was within that. The idea or the benefit, or the idea behind the Financial Management of Parliament Act at the time was always that Parliament needs to be in control of its own regulatory framework when it comes to financial management, but it must be, in terms of the Constitution, it must still be aligned and consistent with financial management regulation elsewhere in government, through the spheres. But it's necessary for Parliament to say that we control our finances so that we can do effective and efficient oversight over the national executive. We don't want to create the image where, yes, we're supposed to hold the national executive to account, but somehow we don't have enough funds to do it, and the blame for that must be put at the feet of National Treasury and the Minister of Finance. So we're trying to get over that, what I would call sort of a theoretical or conceptual problem that might occur. So if Parliament is now accused of not doing proper oversight, certainly National Executive can say, well, it's not for us. I mean, we've given you what you need. You need to use it efficiently and effectively. You can't blame us for not having that power to do what you need to do. And this is what Minister Manuel said when he was Finance Minister. Are you fulfilling your constitutional obligation to have effective and efficient oversight? Why are you not calling more ministers? Why are you not calling more departments? I'm just reiterating what the minister then said. And Parliament then needs to answer that without referring to, say, a lack of funds, because we are in charge of our own funds. But it's a balancing exercise, and it's by no means easy. Chair.
Yeah, let me not monopolize this platform.
Yes.
Okay. Just one thing. I haven't updated my understanding or my knowledge of the case of you. You see, via me, in a vote, you've got a limited percentage you can from the problem. So that's a via me. I'm not sure whether we have, because this thing of unspent funds, if we don't have a cap unto it, we may actually run into a serious problem at a provincial level, even at national parliament, because you cannot just have unspent funds that can be authorized by the same legislature, whether it's national or provincial. Because even the AG will have no interest in that. Once Parliament has authorized, you can't say it's unspent funds or it's irregular or whatever. So the Parliament can actually exonerate itself to a point where the AG can't find anything wrong with what they do. But I just wanted to check with you if we have a cap of what percentage of the budgeted amount can be accepted as a rollover in terms of unspent funds. If you don't have that cap, we create a serious discount. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. No, Section 22 of the Act
uses
the same cap as the PFMA.
Okay.
And specifically on that, one looks here, Section 22.5, that is the ability to make policy, to issue regulations concerning the application of Section 22 of the environment. Those regulations will remain with Parliament. Regulation-making power will remain there to set up the norms and standards to keep it uniform. But Section 22 is basically taken from the PFMA and uses the same cap and the same conditions on environments.
I need to put this in cap that can be accepted. But you can have a budget of X amount of money, and at the end of the financial year, you've got 20% of it as unspent funds, and then you regularize it. The AG can't do anything about it, because you, as the legislature, as the legislator, you've actually authorized that unspent funds. So there's no irregularity.
Yeah.
The
PFMA doesn't address that. It's only when you exceed your budget becomes unauthorized, or if you spend it for a purpose not aligned to your budget, then it's also unauthorized. If you didn't spend it, then it's just unspent funds, which in itself is a problem. And National Treasury usually addresses that through to say that your next year's appropriation is going to be substantially less because you can't spend your money. But it's an issue. I know it's a huge issue for the Auditor General, especially
the commitment for that unspent funds, so that's what you said. I can say the programs will be developed.
Yes.
So this one will be spent.
Yes.
In the coming from the airport, national treasury, don't factor it into our allocation for the next financial year. So, I think as we finalize it, we need to apply our minds on that as a committee. But the consultant and independent consultant is not in our hands, especially if the legislature has the power to authorize its own unauthorized, unspent. That is the problem. Unless you put a cap on that. You can have your budget, but you can't have 10% of it every year as the unspent fund that remains in the budget all the time. Your performance issues and all that. Okay. So, honorable members, over to you.
Madam Lee?
No, thank you, Chair.
Ross?
No, thank you, Chair. What you are touching on, it was a worrying factor even at the E249, the unspent fund, and which even to date, I don't think Advocate Jenkins have got an answer from the Treasurer, where we said, when we allocate the budget, we align it to the programs or to the functions. Now, here is the legislator or our parliament, national parliament, having unspent fund for the next annual budget. How do we then, the Auditor General, how does he then become aware of the performance thereof? If he's not aware of the performance of that allocated money on for that specific function, what would be the report? I don't know how to explain this, but the bottom line is, I've got the money to buy stationery or for 7 programs, and in each program there is unspent fund. In each program there are 7, and then at the end of the day it makes a grand total. If it makes this grand total, the legislature reports that it has got an unspent fund on what? So what instrument are we going to, is Treasury going to come up with a particular instrument, whether on regulations or I don't know where, to make sure that there is a better understanding of those unspent funds were a grand total of what, and how are you going to allocate them on the next financial year? Is it going to be taken like what we are saying here? This is their own resources. It's not their own resources. It was allocated. Their own resources, it might come from their deposits, the interest that they got from their deposits. That is their own resources. But we cannot say it's their own resources because it was allocated, and they said in other ways there was poor planning. That's what it says. There was poor planning. That's why the money was unspent. I think the Treasury needs to explain this, Chair, to us. It's really a very serious concern. It might be okay for national, but we've got 9 provinces. We might end up not being able to centralize having those standards, which we call them their general recognized practices. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I'd just like to make a comment here, and I fully agree with your submission and the previous speakers with regards to the unspent funds. I'm not quite sure whether, when there are unspent funds, whether the new appropriation by Treasury, just taking in consideration the unspent funds of the previous year, is strong enough on the one side. And then on the other side, I'm not sure whether we should just adapt the principle of use it or lose it. We have to find that balance between the two. Somehow at provincial level, I'm particularly concerned with regards to the spending of the funds at provincial level. And I see as a solution perhaps the proposal from the Chair that there should be a cap, and that we have to look at the cap and perhaps how it synchronizes with other legislation like the BFMA. Thank you.
Chair, I think you'll be relieved to hear that
by and large, with the exception of the comment just made by my colleague, the DA supports all of the amendments proposed, or rather incorporated by Advocate Jenkins from the AG and National Treasury. The problem is, Chair, we submitted a list of seven further amendments that haven't been considered yet. Well, by the looks of things, they haven't been considered yet because they are not incorporated into the version that Advocate Jenkins presented. And I hope that they will be at some stage, perhaps before the next meeting, Chair, even just as an exercise for the committee to see what effect these seven proposals will have on the bill. I mean, if you like, Chair, I can go through the arguments for them again, or if you want to do that next meeting, I'll leave that in your hands, but I am ready to explain the consequences of each of these seven amendments when you would like me to. On the matter of the research that was distributed to the committee, I'm afraid it's not particularly balanced, this research. What it does, it doesn't acknowledge that the oversight mechanism in this bill, this committee of MPs that's meant to have oversight of Parliament, only really has four main responsibilities. It's set out in Section 4. It's to consider directives stemming from Section 37.5, which is expenditure of an exceptional nature. It's to consider annual reports. It's to consider instructions given by the executive authority in terms of the Act, and it's any other functions consistent with the Act. So it's an oversight role, but it's a relatively limited one, especially relative to the oversight roles discussed in this research document in Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and Malawi, where there you do have oversight mechanisms, but they have much more significant powers than ours. In Canada, the oversight mechanism approves salary scales. In New Zealand, the oversight mechanism actually advises the Speaker and defines how much support is given to members of Parliament. In the UK, the oversight mechanism ensures the pension benefits of the staff and actually prepares the budget itself. So these are clearly, in Malawi, the oversight mechanism can actually establish departments. So these oversight mechanisms have significantly more power than ours. Now, we would support amending this bill to give our oversight mechanism more power. But to draw a comparison between these four countries and ours is unfair, because you're talking about oversight mechanisms with dramatically more power. There are several where, and obviously the inference from this research is that these oversight mechanisms have the executive authority sitting on them, therefore it's an appropriate thing for us to do. I would argue that because their powers are much more substantial, it's a different case. This research document doesn't consider countries like France and Finland, where the executive authority doesn't sit on the oversight mechanism. So given the role that we've sketched out for our oversight mechanism, I stand by, in particular, our first amendment here, which is simply to leave Section 4 of the Act alone. And I would argue that the research that we've been given is not a valid argument for changing Section 4. And then, Chair, I mean, I won't belabor the rest of the other six amendments that I proposed, but I am ready to do that at some stage, once our parliamentary legal advisor has considered the impact of these seven amendments on the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chabalala.
I don't know, Chair, if I'll be jumping the gun, but I think on that, Chair.
It's not loaded. The gun is loaded.
I'm glad you see. I rather would recommend that we look at it the next meeting, but we need to get advocate to make comments on the proposed amendments rather discussion, because for us it will still be point of discussion. But can we rather get comments from advocate on that in terms of the thinking and the thoughts, then we are able to deliberate it further. Thanks.
Advocate.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Dlamini, I don't want to bore you with repeating, but the issue is, in short, that even under the PFMA, you have this issue of unspent funds, which legislatures do not have to return. Parliament doesn't have to return it. In fact, I don't think constitutional institutions have to return it. In Section 22 of the PFMA, that says that all money that's unspent must be returned to the Provisional Revenue Fund, or Provincial Revenue Fund, except money by provincial legislatures, a provincial entity in the province, a public entity, provincial government that they receive from donor departments, etc., etc. As I say, on a national level, it includes constitutional institutions. So that's there. We're not changing that principle. I think your question goes specifically on how do we control it. Now, in your annual financial statements, your audited annual financial statements, which you must include in your annual report, these things are set out. You have to indicate the specific areas where you did not spend funds, and then you will reach a total in the end. And the Auditor General will have a report on that to say this is as a result of what? There must be a reason for it. So that someone tries to put the checks and balances in place within a legislature, and including Parliament. That role gets supported by the fact that you've got a multi-party democracy, and the fact that you have open access for the media, which then can publish these details. And the media issue can happen at any level in government as well, but Parliament specifically and provincial legislatures must be open. So the media can sit in those meetings and report immediately about the reason for unspent funds and so forth. And one will have to deal with it like that, as the pressure, as public pressure about government not spending the funds for the purpose that it must be. And as I say, certainly Treasury has a role to play, and I would agree, is it sufficient? I would say Treasury on its own is not sufficient, because that is a discussion that happens, if my memory serves me, all behind closed doors, to say, well, you've requested X amount, but you've got a certain amount of unspent funds, so we will give you X minus those funds. As the Chair correctly said, the argument from the requester, the legislature or Parliament, will be, but we've allocated those funds already. They're unspent because they're outstanding invoices. They're unspent because the project is a multi-year project, and so forth. And the discussion must happen then, and one must be sincere with those discussions and recognize the priority needs of the country. Because money lying in a bank account unspent could have been used for a critical purpose elsewhere in the country, to assist with growth and development and job creation and security, etc., all the pillars of government planning. So whilst I agree, I'm very sorry to say I don't really have a solution for you, the solution is there. The fact that we have a financial situation in the country which is not bad, I would agree with that. I love studying it, but it's there are concerns. I see even there are more concerns because we're connected internationally, because we're not an island, a global village. So there are concerns, so one must watch your fiscal position very carefully. And your unspent funds has got to do with it, because those funds can be used for job creation. So I would say it's a different word for the same thing that we're doing in the amendments to this Act. And the concern you have is a broader concern. We cannot fix with this piece of amending legislation. In fact, maybe Treasury has better answers, and I'm sure they have. So how can we deal with unspent funds, other than just in a way punishing a department that's not spending its funds? But the Auditor General does report on it, and it gives it individual in the audit report, as well as the briefing that the Auditor General can give they come to scope, and same with that, which I assume they will do with the oversight mechanism, they will come and say, this is what we found in our audit. We have unspent funds because of vacancies. It's a classic one that's usually there. We have unspent funds because of invoices not being paid. That's another huge issue, invoices not being paid within 30 days. And go through all the reasons why there are unspent funds. What is the total amount? How does that amount compare to the total budget? How does the percentage between the unspent funds and the total budget compare to previous years to get a trend? If there's a trend, and that's how you pick up your fiscal dumping and things like that. And that will empower the oversight mechanism in this case, as much as it empowers SCOPA, the Committee on Public Accounts, in other cases of government departments, to ask the right questions to the accounting officer. And then you see there also that the role of the executive authority is not to account there. The role of the executive authority is to become very aware there of the performance or non-performance of the accounting officer. That's why ministers are sometimes sitting in SCOPA. And similarly with the Section 4 as it is at the moment, there was an allowance that the executive authority can participate on request so that they can see how is our accounting officer performing. Now, the suggestion coming in Section 4 where the executive authority will be able to be members of it will add to that, but there are issues. There are issues, certainly as Mr. Harris has pointed out, there are issues where they cannot be in that committee. And I might say to the committee, legal services, we've been on record to say that, for instance, the issue of considering a directive with financial implications which the executive authority can give. The Act allows the executive authority to give a financial instruction to the accounting officer. Please procure something. I can't think of a new motor vehicle. If that is going to be likely to be unauthorized or irregular, or unauthorized, not irregular, that's likely to be unauthorized. In other words, not in terms of the budget. The accounting officer must notify the executive authority. The executive authority must then, in writing, say, please proceed. I'm aware, or we are aware in Parliament's case, that this is unauthorized, that it's not in our budget. Please carry on and do it. And then that notice must immediately be tabled and referred to the oversight mechanism as well as the Auditor General, so that they are aware of this sort of deviation from the budget. Now in those cases, when the oversight mechanism is considering that financial instruction, it is clear that it would be inappropriate, if not unconstitutional, for the executive authority to chair such a meeting, because they have a clear conflict of interest. But when it comes to the budgeting issues, that's where we say budgeting and planning issues, there the executive authority has a constructive role to play. And therefore we do the amendments to Schedule 4, to Section 4. But I've now started dealing with Mr. Harris's issue as well, but your issue specifically about the unspent funds, that's an audit issue, in short, and it's a national issue, it's not just for Parliament. But it is something that that's acutely on the mind of Treasury. Again, I'm not going to speak on their behalf, because when it comes to retention of unspent funds, it becomes an issue. Because you're going to ask your budget plus an inflation increase, but you still have the money in the bank. So that is an issue that needs to be resolved. If one wants to call it at this point in time politically, because that's a discussion to see how much do we have without disturbing our fiscal position, without borrowing more than we can actually pay in the long term. So let me leave it at that, but it is quite a complicated thing. And I think Mr. Ross's question was in line with that. And the issue of capping, some writer writes about one door being shut and another one being opened. It doesn't work just with the positive things in life. Probably the negative, if you block one way of avoiding tax, someone's going to open another way. If you cap the funds, I'm just saying this broadly, Chairperson, if you say it can be only one cap, one will find fiscal dumping as well, just to get to the cap. I mean, we're already finding fiscal dumping where suddenly there's a lot of expenditure in the last quarter. And it's not always necessary fiscal dumping. It might be projects that are finalized at that stage, invoices that's been lying in the desks, only being paid at that time. So one must look at it and try and desegregate the good and the bad. But it is an issue. It is certainly an issue. I might just add, in Canada, it's a big issue. Before the economic meltdown of the Lehman Brothers in 2008, it was a huge issue. The elections were fought usually on what do we do with our surplus funds? Why do we have a surplus? Why do we have taxpayers have to pay tax. The government is not spending our money and you're telling us we have a surplus at the end of the year and now you want to go fight a war somewhere else in the Middle East. And that's what elections were about, and their budget office then got involved with it and a lot of complications followed. On Mr. Harris' question, Honourable Chair, the inclusion in the memorandum, Chair, if I must do that, I didn't receive any instructions in that regard, so please, no disrespect, I didn't receive any direction in that regard. If you want me to include it, to look at it, we can give it a light blue colour, then... then we can do that so the committee can see and I can prepare comments on that. My broad comment on the research document when it pertains to that is that a lot of these issues pertains to monitoring and we have certainly feel that the oversight mechanism is not there to monitor the performance of the accounting officer. That's the job of the executive authority and the internal audit unit and the audit committee, not the oversight mechanism. The oversight mechanism comes in at a later stage. It doesn't do monitoring. And that was some of the issues that I picked up in that memo. But Chair, if I need to deal with it, I can deal with it before the next meeting. And I just want to, I would agree with Mr. Harris on the research document. It is not, it's not perfectly suited for our purpose here. But the purpose, I might just add, the reason why the Secretary requested it at the time, that's now the previous Secretary, is he wanted to see whether in other jurisdictions we have the situation where the executive authority or the speaker is sitting on their oversight board. So it was for that purpose that the document was drafted, and it did not take into consideration the different functions of each of these bodies. A lot of these bodies have management functions as such. And I'll just put this on the overhead section 17. I just want to remind the committee of bringing this back into the Financial Management Act now. These are additional functions that the oversight mechanism must deal with, and that pertains specifically to planning and budgeting. So it is, in my view, not solely oversight that we're dealing with. So just to keep that into consideration when we deal with these things. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe just to summarize, which is not my job, but for your own homework, I think what we are agreeing on is that we need a very strong oversight mechanism. And I'll substantiate why. The key question is who allocates public funds. And somewhere I get a sense that we tend to think that National Treasury does that. If that was the case, we would not have the money bills amendment procedure. It's not National Treasury, it's Parliament that appropriates funds. That is why the minister comes with a budget proposal. He doesn't come with a budget, he comes with a budget proposal. And it is through this committee that Parliament then says, we agree with this budget proposals, or we amend here or there. Now, once budgets have been appropriated, who presides over the oversight mechanism of different boards? It is Parliament. It's not National Treasury. National Treasury manages and monitors red lines, red spots, you know, whether in that department, in the province, or that province is going to be insolvent and all that. But the Parliament also has a duty to then look in, Appropriations Committee in particular should be able to pick up some of these issues. So it is Parliament that really plays a very critical role in terms of oversight mechanism. I'm saying this, if it is us, we apply the PFMA to various government departments, not just National Treasury and Auditor General. Unspent funds must be returned. This is what we say as Parliament, to line departments. So we can't, at some point, insulate ourselves and put ourselves in a glass house as Parliament and say that which we expect line departments to do must not really apply to us.
And we will come to that assumption or that conclusion if we say National Treasury must deal with unspent funds in the executive. I'm not saying they must deal with us as Parliament in the same way. But I'm saying if we have to set a good example as those of us or legislators, that appropriate funds to various departments or votes. Because we go through one vote, declaration, division of the House.
Mm-hmm.
It's Parliament. It's not the executive, it's us. When we finalize that budget is an appropriation to various arms of government by Parliament, and that is where we've got the responsibility to oversee that budget as Parliament. So I'm just saying, on our side, it means we need to make sure that we lead by example as Parliament. And therefore, the oversight mechanism needs to be very strong. How we deal with that is an internal matter that Parliament must also say. On our own, we need to be seen to be doing the right thing. And therefore, this is what we're going to put in as a mechanism and processes that need to follow that. So I thought I should just make this point. Because the appropriation of public funds is done by Parliament. The executive makes a proposal. Without Parliament says, yes, we agree, they can't spend that money. The last point that I want to in the next meeting, advocate, we must not fall back into the same trap of relaxing because of the decree from the court. We've been working under a particular amount, tremendous speed, because we had September deadline. Now that has been extended, let's use this period, and I think we need to have time frames now, because provinces must also begin to interact with this process, and probably begin to say at what point we want to go back to Parliament, no more longer as a request of the court, but the committee must actually determine its own program on this particular matter. I think we'll have to look into that as quickly as possible, Helen. Because I think the provincial chapter is very, very critical for us to finalize whenever we need to finalize into the House, and thereafter we must go to the NCOP. So I thought those two important, those two comments will help us to move forward. The last one, Honorable Harris, sometimes you must be careful what you wish for. You know, the research that you have been talking about is fine. I'll take this with you outside. Okay, now let me not say much about it, because I think there are challenges in terms of all. That is why there's nothing uniform in terms of the country that we've gone through. The question is, what is it that we tailor make that will suit the South African situation? That's what is very, very critical. We can't transplant solutions from any other part of the world. For some of the countries that we're talking about, they are in serious crisis. And their composition of government is a hung jury. You know, and that is why even the budget office play a critical role in those kind of parliaments, because they have to navigate. We've got a living example now where civil servants are not paid for almost, are not working for almost 2 weeks in one of the biggest economies in the world. It's not major news, but if it was somebody else, I'm sure. I'm sure. And, so that's some of the issues. But I think the key issues, the three issues that I've raised with your advocate, will form a basis, and what the researcher of Honorable Harris, those points that he has raised, in the next meeting, let's try to concretize and finalize all those issues so that we then chart the way forward for the entire process. Thanks. Honorable Harris?
Can I just clarify? I understand our legal advisor wasn't asked to consider my seven proposals, but are you now asking him to do that?
Yeah, that's what I'm
asking. Okay, thank you.
Okay, just check that. All right, thanks. Well, tomorrow's meeting is as set. Ellen's cell phone has gone viral, so he will not be able to send SMSs to honorable members. But those who are not here, try to find some other mechanisms and means to talk to them. But all of us who are here tomorrow, same time, same venue. No, no.
Sorry, tomorrow is V227, 9:30. Reserve Bank on the annual report and annual economic report, and then the Office of the Auditor General on audit outcomes of National Treasury. V227.
Yes, you know, in that meeting, 670 people. No. Can you go and negotiate? Yeah, you are going to find some common sports and arts and culture sitting in one big venue where they don't really need much space. Can you go and negotiate? Please. The sports and culture is very, very important. It unites the nation. But for the purpose of the economy, really. Okay, thank you. Thanks, honorable members. We meet tomorrow in our next in our meeting. Thanks.